Umagnanantamirahandasha Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Adati Swabadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Berevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Hare Krishna. I'm going to continue reading that commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur dealing with all these intricacies on the holy name of Krishna, which we started yesterday, before I move on to the next verse, provided we finish this commentary and get to the next verse. So I'm just going to review quickly, well, as quickly as possible, some of the points that were discussed yesterday in verses 9 and 10. It was giving a long list of sinful activities one could have performed, including killing a brahmana, sleeping with the guru's wife, and so on. Really heinous sorts of things. And that was kind of all okay if you're just chanting Hare Krishna. And it's not that it was okay. That's not the right way of expressing it. But one could be purified of their reactions to those sinful activities just by chanting the holy name of Krishna. And the reason for that is because when one chants the holy name of Krishna, in verse 10 it says, Tad Vishayamati, the Lord's mind thinks of that person, thinking I should give him protection. So we discussed yesterday how just as a devotee chants the name of Krishna or has fondness for the name of Krishna because of his attachment to Krishna. So Krishna also has fondness for his names because of his attachment to his bhaktas. We discussed it elaborately, so I'm not going to repeat that, but that's a very nice point. Jiva Goswami gives it. Ajamil was not chanting to indicate Lord Narayana, but rather out of affection for his son. And still, because of that affection kind of combined with the syllables of the holy name, Krishna is thinking, I should give protection to this person, so he sent the Vishnu Dutas to give Ajamil protection. So how much more so will Krishna be inclined towards those who chant his name with devotion? So this is an example of what we call as the Kaimutya Nyaya, the logic of how much more so. If just with that, it was a semblance of affection for Krishna, Krishna is so kind, what to speak of actual affection for Krishna. As if having a conversation, many of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries as if there's a conversation going on between the personalities in question. So then, what I was doing right before the Shringar Arti, I just kind of took down the questions and answers in a sort of conversation mode. So then the Vishnudas may say that from the first chanting of the name of Narayana, all of the sins, all he had done, all the atonement required for all the sins that he could even commit. And so any chanting that he did after that, he developed bhakti. So then the Yamadutas may question, well, that's okay, fine, we accept that. But because he continued to do sin after he chanted the first time, he had to chant at the end of his life also to become free from those sins. To which the Vishnudutas replied, there were several verses quoted, I couldn't quote all of those things again, that chanting removes unlimited amounts of sins from the past, from the present, and also from the future. Such a unique quality of the names of Krishna. So he didn't have to atone for anything. Even though he was performing sin after the first chanting, he needed not atone because that chanting removed all the sins that was even possible, even in future lifetimes. So then the question comes up. So then the point is, not only the first time, but the chanting also removes the root of sin, which is avidya. So then doubt comes up here. If it removes the root of sin, which is avidya, why was it saying that Ajna continued to commit sinful activities? If the root of sin, which is ignorance, was removed, then why he was committing sinful activities? So to that, two answers were given. Number one, it was likened to the karmas of the Jivan Muktas. So the karmas of Jivan Mukta means one who is liberated even in this body. So their karmas exist like, their karmas may continue to exist as impressions, in order so that they continue to exist in this world and so on. And the example is given just like waking up from a dream, that when you wake up from a bad dream, that dream still exists with you as an impression, but it has no effect on you anymore in your waking life. So similarly, the karmas of the Jivan Muktas exist like that, like impressions and waking up from a dream. So this is one reason. So similarly, Ajamil's sins committed after his chanting were like the bites of toothless snakes. They didn't have any effect on him. And the other answer given was that the Krishna may continue to allow sins to go on in the devotee's life so that the materialistic shastras, people's faith in the materialistic shastras aren't destroyed. Because this is similar to the idea of Krishna saying in Bhagavad Gita, don't disturb the minds of the ignorant persons. Because they'd neither be able to place faith in what you're doing, and they'll lose their faith in what they're doing, and that way they'll be lost. So because people's faith in materialistic shastras is beneficial for them, in order so that faith isn't destroyed, Krishna may allow the sin to continue on in the devotee's life, even though he's chanting the name, and the name removes all sin, the desire for sin, and even the root of sin. Understand? These two answers were given. So then they may say, this sounds like an exaggeration. Because hearing all these things about, this sounds like a hyperbole to get us to chant. Because in the materialistic shastras, they do give hyperboles to get people to take up pious life. They'll say, like, by doing this yajna, you'll attain heaven, which is immortal, amara. They'll use some hyperbole like that to get people to engage in pious activity. So in order to get us to chant, you know, some hyperbole is given about the holy name so people will take up chanting. But if you think like that, it's an offense, you can go to hell. So then so many verses were describing how you can go to hell by thinking in that way. After first being dragged through excruciating suffering, then you go to hell. many verses were like that, which were very inspiring. So to think is offense, one becomes degraded. That's the point. So then they bring up another question. I hope you're getting all this down. This is a quick review. We already discussed this yesterday. So they bring up another point. This sounds like a little bit of a double standard here, because when Parashit Maharaj criticized atonement, which is the answer of the karma, those who follow the path of karma, they gave the answer that you can atone for your sinful activities. And Parashit Maharaj said that is an elephant bath, because it is seen that they continue to do sin after that. But even though it is seen that devotees may continue to do sin after taking bhakti, Parashit Maharaj doesn't criticize bhakti in the same way. So this seems like a little bit of a double standard. That's one point. And another point is that Ajamil, who was a sinner, he attained Vaikuntha by chanting Namabhas. Whereas the smarter brahmanas, who are persons in knowledge, they live proper lives also, they have knowledge also, and they chant the name also, but they continue in samsara because they interpret the name. So this seems like, there's like some double standards going on here. That seems a little bit unfair. That's the implied understanding. To which the answer was given, well, first of all, you should understand that Ajamil's case is really an exceptional case. Generally, the effects of Namabhas, the effects of the name, don't bear fruit immediately. Just like when you plant a fruit tree, the fruit isn't come immediately, it comes after some time. So also the effects of chanting the holy name of Krishna, in general cases, comes after some time. hold on, it comes after some time. And in some cases, so that's in most cases. In some cases, the fruit may not appear to come at all because Christian wants people's faith in the materialistic shastras not to be destroyed. So that point comes up again there. So in some cases, in most cases, the fruit of chanting comes after some time, just as the fruit in the fruit tree comes after some time, after it's been planted. In some cases, the fruit may not come at all. It may not, in other words, a devotee may be chanting, but it doesn't seem like nothing's happening to him. There is no improvement whatsoever. And Krishna may allow that to take place in certain devotees' lives also, in order that people's faith in materialistic shastras isn't destroyed. But at the end of their life, the holy name will take them to the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's in some cases. And in some other special cases, like Ajamil's case, you see an extraordinary thing where it acts immediately. Where Krishna, so Krishna's name will give all sorts of effects. In most cases, it happens gradually. In some cases, it may not happen at all. And some other special cases, exceptions, it happens immediately. So they give an answer. So it's not really a double standard as such. That doesn't really answer the question about the Samartha Brahmanas, but that comes up in the next thing. So you want to ask something about that? He didn't have a next life. He continued on the same life. Yeah. There's a reason for that. We'll get to that later. There's a reason why that took place.
It says that the effect of Namabhas chanting may not come till sometime later, except in exceptional cases. So then, are we to understand that, like, even if devotees they're chanting Namabhas at the time of death, they may not get the effect of the Vishnu Dutas coming to get them?
Yes, in
It's
certain
possible.
cases.
Only in exceptional cases would the Namabhas allow the Vishnu Dutas to come and give you, take your soul or something
Yeah,
like
it's a
that.
special idea here.
In Ajamil's case, can we conclude that he was chanting Namabhas for many lifetimes, or does it actually happen immediately, like you're
That
saying?
happens immediately. Okay, so then, question. Another question. This is all the stuff we covered yesterday in the reading. So I'm just back because I know no one caught everything yesterday. It was impossible. If the name destroys sins, then all karmis, gyanis, and yogis and bhaktas, they should not go to hell because they chant the name of Krishna and the name destroys all sins. And if the name doesn't destroy all sins, then all karmis, gyanis, yogis, and bhaktas should go to hell for their sinful activities. So does the name destroy sins or does the name not destroy sins? And this question comes up in context with the Samartha Brahmanas because they also are chanting the name of Krishna. So does it or doesn't destroy sin? So then the answer given for that, which we started yesterday and now we'll continue from there, is it was compared to a merchant. A merchant has the power to give protection to like a traveler. And he will give that protection so long as the traveler doesn't commit offense. If he commits offense, the merchant may rescind his protection. That doesn't mean the merchant doesn't have the ability to give protection, but he rescinds that protection and proportionate to the degree of destruction of that offensive mentality, then he gains the protection of that. I think the word was merchant used. The merchant again, the traveler gains. Yeah, merchant was the one used. Understand? So the merchant can give protection. But when someone offends, that protection is rescinded. And then, proportionate to the degree of destruction of that offense, then again, he gains the protection of the merchant. And if the offense is completely removed, then he gains the full protection of the merchant. Understand? That point is just a setup, what they want to say. That's a setup point. Understand the setup? Yeah.
What's the purpose in the conditional protection in terms of helping the jiva evolve?
What do you mean, conditional protection?
Oh, if you fully surrender, there's the most protection there, but if you're kind of offensive,
I didn't
then.
say exactly fully surrender. It says to the degree one is free from offense. And it says sins. There's a difference between sin and offense. So if someone is offensive, then they lose the protection of the name. Obviously, if you're sinful, that we're hearing about Ajamil, who was a sinful person. So there's a difference between sin and offense. Sin is like dust. Offense is like the striking of a thunderbolt on rock. So when there's offense, then one loses the protection of the name. So that offense has to be destroyed. To the degree that offense is destroyed, to that degree he's able to associate with the holy name of Krishna.
What is the purpose of the offense destroying that protection?
No, it's just like if someone's it's like a crazy person who's living amongst the society. So he has to be he is put in a separate arena until he comes back to his sanity. So crazy people can't live properly in the association of the society. So there's a place for them, the a sane asylum and so on. So similarly, persons who are offensive, then they are kept at a separate place until they become sane again and give up their offensive mentality. That's a good example, like that. So that offense can be given up by, of course, association with bhakti in the form of the name, and by the association with devotees. But if there are committing offenses, that means that that mentality is itself not conducive for associating. It's like a person who's constantly finding fault with others, then it would be very hard for him to exist in the association of others. So you keep him.
Not barefooted or not. No, this is what you were mentioning before, the previous
Okay.
point. Those who are doing devotional, for some of them, the fruit may come gradually. For some for whom it, how does
Look like they didn't, but somehow they're just chanting, etc. When a person realizes you, he no longer cares about his good and bad fortune arising from past pious and sinful acts, since it is you alone who control this good and bad fortune. Such a realized devotee also disregards what ordinary living beings say about him. This is just your karma. Every day he fills his ears with your glories, which are recited in each age by the unbroken succession of Manu's descendants, and thus should become his ultimate salvation. Understand? So in other words, he doesn't see a world of given to of the results of piety and impiety. He sees a world given to him by Krishna. This situation is coming by Krishna because he's in control of all of these things anyway. So rather than thinking, is this my karma? Is it Krishna? He doesn't think like that. He just absorbs himself in hearing and chanting Krishna's glories. He doesn't waste his time. Is this my karma? Is this not my karma? He doesn't waste time with that. He just absorbing Krishna's glories. Understand? Just goes on chanting Krishna's name. Sometimes, if you ask a devotee, he may say, I'm receiving the fruits of my karma and humility. The devotee will speak like that. Like we'll see, Chittaketu will say, it's my results of my karma. But it had nothing to do with karma, actually. It is a world given to him by Krishna so that the seed of bhakti, which is imperishable, can fructify. Sweet stuff, huh? This is 10:87:40 of the Bhagavatam. Good stuff. All right, there are a few more pages left, so I'm going to continue for those interested in nectar. Maybe. We'll see how far I get. Those who have not destroyed offenses to the name will continue to experience the undestroyed effects of sin. Again, those who have not destroyed offenses to the name will continue to experience the undestroyed effects of sin. Understand? Everyone will be bewildered, starry-eyed. You understand? Those who have not destroyed offenses to the name, do you understand that? Will continue to experience the undestroyed effects of sin. Understand? So we have some sin, aparadha karma is there, aparadha karma is waiting for us to fructify. And we'll continue to experience that so long as we haven't destroyed offenses to the name. That's the same. When, by increase of bhakti, how do you increase it? By practicing it, the offenses to the name are destroyed. the root of sin will be destroyed, and the person will immediately attain the Lord. He's already made this point earlier. But then, in order to increase the bhakti, those devotees may even take one, two, or three lifetimes to attain the Lord. The material happiness seen in those devotees arise from the practice of bhakti. It is not karma. Understand? It is said. So it's a kind of an expansion of the previous verse. Whatever good and bad is happening to him is coming from Krishna, coming from bhakti, is not coming from karma. Same point really being elaborated here. The material happiness seen in those devotees arise from the practice of bhakti. It is not karma. It is said, dharmasya yapavargyasya nartorta yopakalpate. This is also a famous verse. Nartarsa dharmi kantasa, etc. The material results are not suitable as the goal for the person dedicated to higher spiritual goals. The desire of the person dedicated to the higher path is not for attainment of material assets. So in other words, by doing dharma, actually dharma refers to bhakti in this verse. I don't have time to go through all these details right now. But this verse, 1-9, is talking about bhakti dharma. So by bhakti dharma, you'll get material fruits will come up also. If you get distracted by those material fruits, then it's called anartha. It's in a type of anartha. It's called tarangarangini, riding the waves of bhakti. Bhakti will produce results, material facility, people worshiping you, giving you money, etc., facility. But those things are not to be accepted by those who are dedicated to the highest goal, the highest path. Even if they come, they will not go after them because they're after the highest attainment. Understand? So the material happiness is coming from Krishna, but that doesn't interest the devotees. Because they just want that seed of bhakti to fructify into a fruit of love. Krishna, the fruit of prema. The suffering seen in those devotees is given by the Lord, who is skillful in increasing the devotion of his devotee, and who is like a doctor who makes a person fast and gives bitter medicine for increasing the patient's appetite. Sweet. Then what verse is quoted? Yasyaham anugrihanami harishe tadanam shanai. This famous verse. If I especially favor someone, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Yes, Krishna is very kind, lovable Krishna. So anyway, the point has just been expanded. The world of happiness and distress is coming from Krishna. That's the point. And all is meant for augmenting his bhakti. Simple. Understand? Now, next section goes into the 10 offenses, I think, to the name of Krishna. And then we're almost done. Hang on. Okay? Hang on tight. Got a little bit more to go. Next section. Huh? Among the 10 offenses, the very strong effects of interpreting the name, thinking its glories are exaggeration, and equating it to pious acts are obstacles to being a Vaishnava. I will repeat it. Yes. Among the 10 offenses, the very strong effects of interpreting the name, thinking its glories are exaggeration, and equating it to pious acts are obstacles to being a Vaishnava. Being an offender is an obstacle. Simple. Among the other offenses, two are very strong. Offending the devotees, that's most strong. Especially in neophytes like ourselves. And committing sin on the strength of chanting. These two are very strong. Especially after you hear all these glories of the name. You're like, fantastic, I have nothing to be worried about. And you go, sinning and grinning, like that. Committing apparat, so much apparat committing. So he said these two are very strong, hard to avoid. Those two are particularly described in a frightening way. Yeah, he quotes here. This is from the Padma Purana. How can the name tolerate criticism of those who spread the name? And another quote from the Padma Purana. For a person who commits sin on the strength of chanting, there is no purification by the servants of Yama. Dang. That's heavy. Even the Yamadutas can't help you. Understand? So there is no other means of destroying the effects of these two offenses than to continually chant the name while suffering appropriately for the offense. So while you're getting, you know, banged up because of your offenses, all you have to do is keep chanting. You know, just like, this is not a proper comparison, but like Haridas Thakur, he was getting manged in 22 marketplaces, and he was just chanting Hare Krishna the whole time. And then after the 20, usually everyone would die in three marketplaces, you'd be dead. But he was 22 marketplaces, he was still chanting, looking blissfully. And the executioner's like, this is a problem. If you don't die, we're going to die. Yeah. So then Haridas Thakur said, no problem. Then he went into samadhi. So they thought he was dead. They dumped his body in the Ganga. And similarly, when you're getting the reactions to your offenses, it'd be feeling, sometimes it may be very painful. Your only recourse is go on chanting and tolerate that, getting purified of the offense. That's being said here. The effects of other offenses will be destroyed simply by continual chanting. The difference is that the other offenses we may commit, we may not receive heavy reactions for those. And just by continually chanting, that offense will be removed. But for some of these other ones, like Vaishnava Aparad, which includes Guru Aparad, and interpreting the name and committing sinful actions on the strength of chanting, those you may receive some suffering for that, at which time you have to continually chant also and tolerate the suffering. Understand? In one situation, you have to continually chant and tolerate suffering. In the other one, you just continually chant, and those offenses will also go away. 2 points. Understand? Continuing on. Some people make the following proposition. 4 more pages left. Understand? Don't worry about time. There is no time in the spiritual world. Understand? Hare Krishna. Some people make the following proposition. Quote, those offenders of the name who are without karma and gnan and who practice bhakti with hearing and chanting but have not taken initiation because they have not surrendered to the feet of a guru are still called Vaishnavas. The word Vaishnava is defined as the person who takes Vishnu as his object of worship according to Panini's sutras. 4224 and 4395. Thus, Vaishnavas are those who have made Vishnu the object of worship by accepting initiation, but also those who make Vishnu the object of worship simply by worship, since there is no other word to describe the two types of people. So the latter type of person also should not fall to hell. Understand the proposition? Understand the proposition? Yes, everyone's shaking their head, yes. Okay, then I'll continue on and I'll explain it. This, however, is not correct. I'm glad you understood it. This, however, is not correct because one cannot attain the Lord easily without guru. Quote, this is a nice verse. Nirdeham adhyam sulabham sudurlabham plavam sukalpam guru karnadharam Maya nukulena nabhas swateritam pumam bhavadhim natarat saatmaha. Having attained the human body, rarely attained, but attained easily sometimes by good fortune, is likened to a well-constructed boat with the guru as the captain, pushed by the favorable winds of serving me, a person who does not cross the ocean of material existence, is like a killer of himself. Understand? So the human form of life is rarely attained, sudurlabham, but it is attained automatically by dint of just moving around the material nature. And it is compared to a boat, plavam, sukalpam. Plavam means a boat, sukalpam, a boat constructed for a very particular purpose. Every form of life is constructed for a particular purpose, so to speak. Like, if you get bare body, you can sleep 6 months and wake up refreshed. If we sleep 6 months, we'll be dead. You get disease and so on. Understand? So what is the part purpose of the human form of life? To cross over the ocean of material existence. And who is the captain of the boat? Guru. Where are the favorable winds? Service to Krishna. The shastras which describe service to Krishna, etc. So one who does not cross this ocean, then they're considered killer of their own soul. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is quoting this verse to say that the proposition that one is a Vaishnava without accepting initiation from a guru is not correct. He's quoting this verse. Therefore, it should be explained, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues here, therefore it should be explained that there is no other way of attaining the Lord than by becoming a devotee who has surrendered to the feet of a guru, who will be attained in another birth by the power of worship. Very important point. In other words, if you think you are a Vaishnava without taking initiation, and you go on worshiping the Lord, that is not okay as such, but you will not attain the Lord immediately. You'll develop sufficient piety, devotional piety, bhakti poshaka sukriti, sukriti that nourishes bhakti, by which you will get a guru in a future life, and after taking shelter of that guru, then you'll get Krishna. That's what Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is saying here. So you meet many persons like this, especially nowadays with the history of ISKCON and institutions in general. People think like, I do not need a guru. I'll simply read the books. That's okay. I'll see you next life. Yeah, maybe not. I'll see you in a different body, but I'm sure I'll see you at some point. Yes, you'll have to take birth again. But it is seen that Ajamil, without surrendering to Guru, easily attained the Lord. Now you're presenting contradiction here. Now I'm about to get confused. I wasn't expecting that one. This can be explained as follows. Those who, like cows or asses, make their senses pursue sense objects cannot know the Lord. Bhakti or guru, even in their dreams. So I'll read it again because these things are constructed a little weird. Those who, like cows or asses, make their senses pursue sense objects. That means people like animals to chase after sense enjoyment. Cannot know the Lord, bhakti, or guru even in their dreams. That's because they're too busy chasing after sense enjoyment to even care. But, as in the case of Ajamila, they can be delivered even without guru by chanting the name in Namabhas without offense. Though it has been definitely ascertained that the Lord should be worshipped, that worship is the means of attaining him. Though it has been definitely ascertained that the Lord should be worshipped, that worship is the means of attaining him, that the guru is the person who teaches about worship, and that those who are devotees attain the Lord. Understand? 4 points. Although this is all true, it is also said, quote, it's from the Padyavali, chanting the holy name does not depend on initiation, pious activities, or the Purashcharya, regulative principles generally observed before initiation. Lord Chaitanya also quoted this verse. The holy name does not wait for any of these activities. It is self-sufficient. They love this verse in Kali Yuga. Yes, I don't need guru. They'll grab onto this type of shlokas. They like it. As well, so Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur continues, as well, we have the example of Ajamil. See, even Ajamil, he did not have guru. But one who thinks, this is where we get in trouble. That may be true. You may be mentioning a true point. But one who thinks, what is the benefit of taking the trouble to accept guru? I will attain the Lord just by chanting the name. Will not attain the Lord. Yes. They will not attain the Lord because of the offense of offending Guru, third offense. However, in this life or another life, if he surrenders to the feet of a Guru, after destroying his offense, he will then attain the Lord. So he's saying it's an offense to think in this way. I do not require a Guru. I'll just attain the Lord by chanting Harinam. He said that thinking is itself offensive. Although you may attain the Lord by Namabhas without offense, in certain cases that can happen because the name is itself self-sufficient. But if you shall think in this way that I will not accept Guru, third offense is disregard Guru. So disregarding Guru also includes disregarding the importance of accepting the Guru. He said that's the third offense, so you will not attain the Lord if you shall think in this way. And unfortunately, in the age of Kali, most people's decision to not accept Guru is based on history of the institutions and so on in the material world. Therefore, they have this offensive mentality. Therefore, they'll not get the Lord. They'll not get the Lord because of offense. These offenses are killer, huh? Kicking our butts. Continuing on, we only have a page left, so buckle up. Some people say that persons who worship devatas should be treated like the karmis, with sin and offense. Others say that Bhakti Devi places them in an even lower category because they do not have general surrender. Thus it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, Ye Pyanya Devata Bhakta, Yajante Shalayan Vita, etc. Those who are devoted to other gods and with faith worship them, they also worship me, but by the wrong method, O son of Kunti. Understand? So people say that persons who worship devatas should be treated like karmis, with sin and offense. Others say that Bhakti Devi places them in a lower category. And then this verse of Gita is quoted to show that they're in a lower position because they worship in the wrong way. Although they worship Krishna, they do so in the wrong way. It is a new point. But for those who are simply offenders, there is no deliverance at all. It is said, Tamaham Dushita Kruran Samsareshu Naradama. This is from the Bhagavad Gita also. I cast those hateful, cruel, and lowest of humans, constantly doing evil, into repeated birth and death in the wombs of demons. Yes. But some persons say that these offenders' offenses are destroyed by mental absorption and hatred on the Lord, since it is said, another point. Another verse, Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, 1st chapter, verse 30. Just as by Vaidhi Bhakti, one can attain one's spiritual goals, many persons have attained suitable forms after absorbing their minds in the Lord out of lust, hatred, fear, and family relationships filled with affection, and after giving up absorption and enmity of the Lord in the case of hatred and fear. And after giving up absorption and enmity of the Lord. Okay. So they're absorbed in enmity, and by that absorption in Krishna, that absorption purifies them of sin, and then they attain the Lord. They attain, usually Sayuja Mukti. And he says this idea is represented in another way. Yeah. Yeah, it means that by that absorption in Krishna, they will give it up. They attain Sayuja Mukti. Because the hatred they have is temporary, whereas the effect of that absorption is avyayam, is imperishable. So they eventually attain mukti, sayuja mukti, after giving up their enmity. Which is represented.